Good morning and welcome back to another podcast. It seems ages since we've done one of these again, so welcome back everyone. We are in Adelaide in South Australia. It is pouring with rain and we're in another lockdown. So this is Thursday the 22nd of July 2021. We've had so many questions about Ruby Rose 2 and the precise specification. Now, over the last week, we've put out another video. I hope you've all seen it, detailing exactly what we've how we've specified the boat. But a lot of you have asked some pretty in-depth questions about the specification. And rather than kind of drilling down into absolute nerddom, which is something that I really love, I thought I'd go through a few of the points with you in detail by podcast. So I hope you are going to enjoy this. It is pretty detailed. If you are not a nerd and into like specific boat details, this may not be for you. But I guess that anyone looking to buy a boat, well, we've lived on board for 5 years full time now, and we've been boat owners for mostly most of my adult life. And there's a lot of things in the way that we've specified the boat that we have kind of like come to conclusions because we've got experience. And there is, and there has always been, a pretty large disparity between what brokers will try and sell you, what dealers will try and sell you, what boat shows, magazines, glossy adverts on Instagram will try and sell you, and what we've actually found to be the reality of living on boats. So I have in front of me the options list for Ruby Rose 2. It is far, far more detailed than Ruby Rose 2, this Ruby Rose 2 video that we put out, which had a lot of details about just the general specification. But this is, as I said, going to go through options one by one and detail exactly our rationale for those. So I hope you enjoy all this. Just as an aside, I know that some of you absolutely hate YouTube Shorts, but for certain specific questions that need kind of visual answers, we are going to be putting out YouTube Shorts over the coming months. And what we're doing is, because again, we get so many emails from you boat nerds like me, who are like, oh, I really enjoy the kind of like the drilled down details. There are going to be some nerd updates, so I hope you are going to enjoy those. But apologies to anyone who is fed up with YouTube Shorts. I actually really like them, and it's a very good way of putting parcels of information across, but again, it's pretty subjective. Anyway, on to the specification for Ruby Rose 2, and I'm going to go through this in the sequential order in which we've specified certain items. Item one is to do with the anchor chain. Now, before you all kind of like go, oh God, Nick, please, anchor chain, how is this going to be of any interest to us? I think one thing that you do need to realize is that we are coming to the whole build of Ruby Rose 2 from a very different perspective from Ruby Rose 1. Ruby Rose 1 was a medium displacement monohull, and as such, we were pretty blasé about weighing the boat down. And I've said this before, that it's not as if for most people you buy a boat and then suddenly take on board like 2,000 kilograms of equipment and weigh the boat down. It is a slow creep that over the years you put something else on and put something else on. And after a while, the boat is sitting like 3 inches lower in the water than it would be otherwise. Now, it was at a point about two and a half years ago where we realized that at the end of our season, the boot line, the water line of Ruby Rose, you know, she was covered in algae because the antifoul just wasn't covering that area. And when the boat was launched, we found that the antifoul, the boat trim was absolutely perfect. And so the antifoul did a pretty good job of protecting the hull from growth. However, additions that we put onto Ruby Rose specifically our kind of lifestyle equipment, the fact that it was our house, but more importantly, I think it was items that we put onto the boat that kind of like affected the trim. She sat pretty low down at the stern, and that's because there were certain items that, you know, there were nowhere else realistically to put them. And the two things that I think really spring to mind are, number one, the self-steer gear, the hydrovane, and number two, the life raft. So the hydrovane, you know, for those of you who kind of like are not boaty, it's a big piece of like stainless steel that allows you to steer the boat using wind. It's a wind vane, essentially. But that hangs about, I don't know, about 8 to 10 inches away from the stern of the boat. So from the point of leverage, it did add a lot of leverage. And that was 68 kilograms. So it's not a small amount of weight to deal with in a boat that weighed about 12 tons. In addition to that, we had a six-man life raft, and that added about 50 kilos with the bracket involved. And then there were the stern lockers, and those stern lockers were weighed down with things like bikes and paddle boards and all our equipment. So basically, she was down at the stern. And this, coupled with us really adding bits to the boat, you know, Teresa had two sets of weights on board, we had a bread machine and lots of little things. And it became pretty apparent that as we cleared Ruby Rose out at the very end of our kind of time with her back in September last year, that she sailed so much better with all the stuff taken off. I remember going for the test sail with the new owners, and it was a really light wind day, and we didn't have the big sails up, the Code Zero. And I'm thinking, oh, I wonder how this boat's going to sail, because, you know, Southerlies aren't fast boats. But no, we got out onto the Solent, and, you know, the boat just flew. The light wind performance, I'm like, blimey, this is exactly what she should have been doing for all those years. Now, obviously, you can't just give up on every single one of your home comforts when you're living aboard. But I do think that it's become pretty apparent to us that we have to be very, very sensitive to weight. Not obsessively so, but I think, you know, the big difference between the catamarans and the monohulls, and something that we have, you know, been made very aware of from the get-go with all our research and all those research videos that we did, is that catamarans sit on the water and monohulls sit in the water. So from the point of view of trim, they are so, so sensitive to just weighting down. So anchor chain. We know that we want to go to the Pacific, and that means deep anchorages. Now, we've always worked on about 4 to 6 times scope. Now, for those of you, again, not in the know, and apologies for all of those of you who are like super, yeah, okay, Nick, we know what scope is. Essentially, when you are anchoring a boat, you have to work out the maximum depth that you're going to be in. And obviously that depth will change according to tidal state. So, you know, in areas of, say, France, where there is a massive 10-meter tidal range, you have to really add 10 meters sometimes between the high water and low water. So we work on 4 times scope for a day anchorage and 6 times scope for like pretty rough weather. So in 10 meters of water, we would put 40 meters of chain out and, you know, 60 meters for rough weather. Now, obviously that is different if you are using rope or road. Road, for those again not in the know, is kind of like the nautical term for anchor rope. So for those using road or combination, you have to change the scope, but we've always been all chain. Now for us, anchor chain, we are looking at, I think we're going to go with about 70 meters of chain. Now that will enable us to get effectively into about, let's call it 5 times scope. So we're looking at about 15 meters depth. Now 15 meters depth of anchorage is about the most that I'm comfortable with anchoring. And the reason for that is that I like to be able to see the anchor. I like to be able to dive on an anchor. And with my advancing age and, you know, complete lack of practice in free diving, getting down to 15 meters is not something that I'm going to be able to do effectively at the moment. And it's not just to check the chain, but, you know, we've got into situations before where we actually, you know, if you snag an anchor, you it's good to be able to dive on it and find out what the problem is. So I always like to anchor in under 10 meters of water, ideally 5, but that's not going to be always viable in far-flung locations. So we're going with about 70 meters of anchor chain. Now back to the whole thing about our specification of anchor chain, there is also the whole thing about weight. It, Anchor Chain weighs an absolute shed ton. It's a huge amount of weight, and the standard Anchor Chain diameter for a boat like of our size, Ruby Rose 2, is 10 mil. Now, 10 mil of chain is, you're looking at, I think it's 2.3 kilos per meter of chain. So if you're putting 70 meters on, you are putting a whole amount of weight in, you know, in the front of the boat. And just as an aside, this is one reason why it's very important to work out where your anchor locker and your chain drop is on a boat. And I guess that with catamarans, because they have normally big trampolines, it is feasible to put the chain locker near the mast, near the center point of gravity for the whole boat. And that means that when you've got the anchor up, the chain sits more centrally, so it doesn't affect the trim so much. We with Ruby Rose 2 have opted to go with G70 chain. Now, that essentially is reinforced steel. It's a different grade of steel. And what that means is that you can drop down one size with the chain link diameter. So we can work with an 8mm G70 rather than the standard 10mm. Now, that essentially takes the anchor chain weight from 2.3 kilos per meter to 1.5 kilos per meter. So we're saving 0.8 of a kilo, 800 grams per meter of chain. So you're looking at like almost 60 kilograms of saving just by changing the diameter of chain. That for us is huge. And keeping 60 kilos off the boat, it's a no-brainer. Absolutely, it's pretty easy for that. So that is something that, you know, we have worked extensively with. It does throw up questions about how much scope you need to put out if you've got a slightly lighter chain on the sea floor. Now, what I would say about the whole concept of anchoring and how much chain that you have out, we were always taught by old sailors, and a few points. Number one, when you are in light airs, it is actually the anchor chain that keeps the boat steady. The anchor bedded in doesn't really make much difference. It's literally the weight of the chain. And we've woken up on still nights, and the boat hasn't moved at all because the anchor chain has held it in place. When you are looking at heavier weather, what you are looking at, literally the weight of the anchor chain, is simply to keep the shank, the shaft of the anchor on the seabed, because that's what keeps the anchor dug in. And that's where your scope comes in. We don't have any real term and real time analysis of how having a lighter grade of anchor chain is going to affect that. But it may be that we'll have to pay out a little bit more scope. I do not envisage any problems. One thing that I would say about anchors, and we're going with the Sarka anchor, we have kind of gone through this whole thing about anchors and anchor chains and what works best with us. And on Ruby Rose, we had two anchors, and I'm going to just throw the brands out there. We started off with a Delta. We then moved to a Mantis, and full disclosure, Mantis gave us the anchor. So that, you know, are we objective about it? But, you know, probably not. But let me just run through what we found of the characteristics of both those anchors. Number one, the Delta would set, but it wouldn't set easily. And we put that down to a couple of different reasons. Number one, it didn't have a roll bar and it was pretty light. It was a 25 kilogram anchor for a 12 ton boat. Now, that 25 kilo anchor, it wouldn't dig in as easily. And so that was frustrating, because especially if you're in a crowded anchorage in the Caribbean, and they can be really, really crowded, it is pretty useful to have an anchor that you know is going to bite immediately. And that essentially means that, you know, you put your anchor in and suddenly, you're reversing. And sometimes you're reversing for 20 meters before your anchor bites. And that means that you're out of position and you're too close to the boat behind, which means you have to reset it. And so we were pretty frustrated with that anchor. Moving to the Mantis, which was a far bigger anchor, and that thing set like immediately. It bit so quickly. And two things that I think we found that made that set quickly. The roll bar meant that when the anchor was sat on the seabed, it would turn over very, very quickly. It wouldn't sit upside down and then refuse to right itself. And the second thing is, it had a really sharp point. So depending on the sea floor, especially if you had seagrass, it would bite in super quickly. To the point at which we had to be really, really careful to make sure that we were paying our anchor chain as we were reversing so that it wouldn't bite hard without a bridle on, because eventually you do bend and then bend the nuts that are, and the bolts that are holding the windlass in. And eventually, you know, and we've seen this on the internet, your windlass flies into the water because you've just pulled it out. So that was an amazing anchor. And we kind of then, I guess when we were... with Ruby Rose, when we first had her for the first few years, we were pretty unaware of kind of the importance of anchors. We'd seen all this thing on the internet about, oh, you know, you've got to get the right anchor. And I guess that we'd only use that first anchor for kind of like the occasional overnight stop. But yeah, living on board, I remember being in a storm in Marsh Harbour in the Bahamas with that, you know, the roll bar anchor. And literally, we had no concerns. The thing just bit in. It was just steady as a rock. And I think actually our bigger concern, I think the only reason I was on anchor watch for most of that night was we were so worried that other boats would drag into us, knowing that we wouldn't drag. I think that, you know, it was blowing, it was gusting up, you know, 40, high 40s. Boat was absolutely secure. No problem with that. So moving on to kind of our history with anchors, we haven't... we have nothing, we've got no kind of point of reference for the anchor that we're putting onto Ruby Rose 2, which is a Sarka anchor, but all the tests that have come back said, look, it's pretty amazing. And so it's not a roll bar anchor though, but apparently the way that it's all kind of like designed means that it will bite pretty quickly. Just as an aside, and I think this is something that we've actually only come across anecdotally through experience, when we were sailing over the last couple of months in Australia. And again, for those of you who don't know, we had two different Seawind 1260s. One had a roll bar anchor and one had the Delta. Now, the roll bar anchor, again, pretty easy to use, pretty foolproof. We just dropped that and it would completely set. The other boat, which had a Delta, we really struggled with. Again, and, you know, we... kind of like in certain, I remember being in Nara Inlet up in the Whitsundays, knowing that the chart said that the bottom was like complete just sand and mud, and thinking, well, this anchor should set really, really, really quickly. And it was a pretty crowded anchorage because there was weather coming and it was one of the only safe anchorages that was protected from the north. And we couldn't get the anchor to set. So, you know, after kind of screaming blue murder at the anchor and, you know, threatening with all sorts of shenanigans, we kind of went back to our first principles and like, okay, well, why is this anchor not setting? And I think Teresa actually came up with a solution, which was operator error again. And pulling it all apart, I think we just got lazy with the roll bar anchor. I think one thing that became apparent was that if you drop a roll bar anchor into the water, it doesn't really matter if you're doing one or two knots of boat speed in reverse, because the anchor will sit and roll straight over. If you are in a catamaran and the boat has got any forward motion at all, even if you're doing half a knot, and as you drop the anchor, the physics of the drop means that the anchor will just roll onto its back. It will sit on its back and then it'll be more difficult to roll over. And we found this out. So Teresa was like, stop being so impatient with that anchor. Just wait for the boat to be absolutely at zero and then pay the anchor chain out and get it to drop onto the bottom. And yeah, lo and behold, we did that and it resolved our problems. So I think that, you know, one thing that we schooled ourselves on, what are we doing wrong? This is something, you know, we need to address. So yeah, going back to first principles, every anchor, the anchors that we've used, they are sensitive to different methodologies and different techniques. So when we are anchoring the, you know, Ruby Rose 2, we will be using a Sarka. Unfortunately, because of the design of the hull, the way that the anchor and the anchor chain and the bridle system go, you can't sit a roll bar anchor comfortably in the recess where it's designed. So, but as I said, we have very, very high hopes for this Saka anchor, and we'll, of course, report back. Couple of points that I think, you know, I just want to raise about the whole how we go forward and what we're going to tell you and how we're going to kind of like work with kind of discussing things that work with Ruby Rose 2. Honestly, we are not going to be in a position where if something's not working for us, we won't consider swapping it out. I think that, you know, Seawind have been pretty easy in allowing us to test things and say, look, this doesn't work, you know, it could be better, and reporting back on it. So don't think that for a second, if something isn't quite suited to us, we won't say that this isn't, there's a problem here. I think this is our home, and as such, you know, we want it to be safe. And I think the anchors and chains and also bridles are something which, you know, it keeps, you know, without them, you have a lot of problems with your boat. So, yeah, we will report back on this and every other aspect of the build and going forward, how we kind of review and test the products that we've specified. Again, you know, we've done this with the whole concept of doing our research, taking advice from Seawind, taking advice actually from a lot of our patrons and Facebook groups who, you know, have test sailed this equipment and have used this equipment. But yeah, we'll get back to you with all that. So like kind of a really nerdy, just a really nerdy discussion about anchor chains and anchors. And yes, it's pretty like in depth and discusses our rationale behind why we have used different anchors, anchoring techniques and chains. And look, honestly, we'll get back to you with a lot more of this stuff, you know, discussing the minutiae of our build. And honestly, if this is of interest to you, leave us a comment anywhere. Leave us a comment down below. Leave us a comment on Facebook, on YouTube. And if you have things that you really want us to dive into and it doesn't really constitute the kind of the bones of a video without sending half the audience to sleep, we'll put it into a podcast. These are pretty easy to put together. And, you know, if you're trying to get to sleep at night and you're like, I need to listen to Nick's dulcet tones banging on about G70 anchor chain, well, honestly, I'm your man. So listen, hope you enjoyed that. That was just a brief discussion about one of the very, very small decisions we've made about Ruby Rose. So looking forward to seeing you all over on YouTube, on Facebook, Instagram, and we'll be back here again soon. So enjoy that one and stay safe, everyone. I'm gonna love you, babe. Cross my heart and hope to die.